Hello. Thank you for tuning in. You are listening to ByteRadio.me's Bringing Inspiration to Earth show. For network or show information, visit www.ByteRadio.me or call 843-808-0777. And now, the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show with your host, Robert Sharp. Good day, everyone, and thank you for joining us for this edition of the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show, and happy 2018 to everyone. This is going to be a great year ahead. Today, my very special guest is Ira S. Pastor. He is the CEO of BioQuark, Inc., and today we're going to be talking about BioQuark and tissue regeneration. BioQuark, Inc. is focused on the development of novel biologics that have the ability to naturally modify the regulatory state of human tissues and organs with the goal of curing a range of chronic degenerative diseases as well as affecting complex regeneration. Ira Pastor has more than 30 years experience across multiple sectors of the pharmaceutical industry, including pharmaceutical commercialization, biotech drug development, managed care, distribution, over-the-counter, and retail. For more information, you can visit their website, which is bioquark.com, and it's bioquark.com, and I have a direct link to their website in the show page description. Okay, so with that, I'd like to welcome Ira to the show. Good day, sir.
Hi, Robert. Thanks so much for having me.
It's my pleasure. I'm just looking forward to becoming so much more informed about this branch of science that's going on that I just don't know if many people realize exactly the depth and scope of what you're doing. So I guess maybe the first place to start is, you know, BioQuark is quite an unusual name. And so can you tell us a little bit about the company and kind of what your mission is? How this kind of came about?
Absolutely. The company sort of got its start and its sort of strategic thrust by, in essence, going back to nature for a second look here in the 21st century at, you know, all of the wonderful organisms that we share this planet with. That are, you know, from a health and wellness perspective, are sort of much superior and further advanced than we are as human beings. And we, you know, we think of ourselves as the top of this food chain, but you sort of, when you look out there, we share this planet with many species that are capable of complex tissue and organ regeneration. The amphibian kingdom comes to mind. Where you have salamanders and newts that are capable of limb regeneration, spinal cord regeneration, the ability to recreate parts of the heart, eyeballs if they are fall out, even large segments of their brains. In a very similar fashion, many of these lower organisms possess these really fascinating capabilities for repairing and reversing genetic damage when it happens. So I like to give the example, you know, that cancer is something that is found all throughout the biologic world. You know, we as humans get cancer, dogs get cancer, snakes get cancer, trees get cancer. However, many of the regenerative organisms deal with cancer a lot differently than we do. In essence, taking tumors and just turning them back into normal, healthy tissue. At the far end of this sort of superhuman capability, you have organisms on this planet that do not age. You have some that age backwards. And even at the very end, you have a couple species that technically even die and are reborn. And now, needless to say, we as human beings are extremely weak when it comes to accomplishing any of these things. In most part, we get, you know, pretty good at laying down scar tissue. And we have some DNA repair capabilities, but they diminish over time as we age. So ultimately, you know, we have the mission of going back to nature. What a lot of people don't realize is for the last 100 years, the pharmaceutical industry was based heavily in natural products, primarily those found in the plant kingdom, also the fungal and bacteria kingdom. And 85% of all drugs that we still take today either had their origins or are still produced in these non-human systems. And so, you know, we are taking a second look at all the other, you know, the real smart people will tell you, you know, we have not studied nature as much as we should have, and there's much more out there to explore. And so our mission is ultimately to go back to nature, figure out how the amphibian, how the starfish, how the zebrafish undertake these amazing regenerative and reparative capabilities and figure out how we can reignite these possibilities. And that is our core mission.
Wow, wow. That's, yeah, we, when you compare ourselves to, you know, those species, yeah, we do seem to be quite lagging. And you know, the idea of cancer existing in many organisms and some actually being able to, you know, envelop it and kind of shift that. I mean, cancer is such a huge disease for humankind and such a resource drain that, you know, being able to alter the course of treatment of that would be, God, that would be just a major plus for medicine.
Yeah, we, you know, the interesting thing, you know, we are, you know, we look at sort of this $7 trillion that we're spending on healthcare now around the world, about $3 trillion, which comes from the U.S. alone. The majority of all that money, when you set aside your infectious diseases, trickles down to basically two things. Diseases that have either an underlying cellular degeneration component, so your Alzheimer's, your Parkinson's disease, your diabetes, congestive heart failure, or have a cellular damage component, so your fibrotic disorders and your inflammation disorders and cancer. And if we can ultimately figure out the key to sort of, which basically underlines both of these things in nature, we are going to be able to really peel back, in our opinion, a lot of what is killing us nowadays or causing quite a lot of suffering, degeneration, and pain. Because right now as an industry, and it's a, you know, I come from pharma and speak about this stuff because I sort of got tired of it being inside all the time, but the last 100 years we've tried to focus on, you know, the outputs of diseases, and we got pretty good at it. When I say outputs, I talk about symptoms. But symptoms are not disease. Disease is what comes before. You know, I like to point out, you know, the inflammation in your osteoarthritis is not your osteoarthritis. It is a symptom. The hyperimmune response in your psoriasis is not your psoriasis. It is the symptom. And so, you know, we have, the last 100 years, we've forgotten that, you know, disease is a little more complicated and it's a bit upstream. But we need to find creative ways of dealing with that. And that is sort of one of the things we were learning. And the interesting thing with the topic like cancer, I mean, it's a horrible topic, but you think when you read the news and all the neat stuff that's going on nowadays that we're just learning, but a lot of what, you know, I mentioned originally in terms of species that are either cancer resistant or cancer killers in just a natural state, it, you know, goes back almost 100 years now. We knew about these things. And you can go into the literature, and it's really fascinating because you have, you know, back in the day, in the 1930s and the 1940s, when we were first studying carcinogens, right? Forget about cancer, but the things that cause cancer. And we were studying it, you know, we would take, you know, rabbits and rats and guinea pigs, and we'd give them some nasty carcinogens, and they'd all develop cancer and die. And then you have these weird papers that are out there, and it's funny, you go back to 1943, And you have this experiment where you gave a bunch of salamanders to carcinogen, and they developed cancer too, but then 2 weeks later they were cancer-free. It was always one of these situations where, someone's messing with the experiment. But no, what we're now doing, 90 years later, it's figuring out, okay, now we get it. There's more going on here than we originally realized. And, it's a simple frog or it's a simple little salamander, but, hey, evolutionarily, they've been learning for a long time that there's other ways of doing things than just trying to, zap stuff with the poisons or radiation. So there's a lot of neat stuff in the future, and I'm a futurist, I guess, at heart. There's a tremendous amount of stuff in the past that we just really need to go back to and look at again, and I think we'll be all sort of the better off for it. In terms of some of these answers.
And it's interesting because, as you were talking, about, the history and kind of, that was, the papers of old. The thing that flashed into my mind was, the idea of, we had this invention of the electric car, but then, boom, the fuel industry came in and kind of put the kibosh on that, and all of a sudden there's no electric cars around, until, it's coming back. And what I'm wondering is, before we go into a little bit, is, you come from the pharma industry, and it seems like the pharma industry, there's a lot of attention toward, the treatment of the symptoms, like you talked about, but wouldn't your work at really kind of getting to the root of the systems that cause the disease and shifting those, won't that hurt pharma? Or is pharma interested in your approach, really kind of getting to the root of the cause and that may eventually put some of their drugs out of business?
It definitely, and once again, I come from the industry. I have friends that still work in the industry and they love it.
Uh-huh.
I mean, for many people, it's a great place to be. These extremely profitable companies, and they're fun to work for, and people spend their entire careers just selling the next cholesterol-lowering drug or anti-inflammatory. But one of the things that has happened in the last couple of decades, you had these sort of integrated companies that did everything. And, in the 1970s and 80s, they started getting rid of their internal manufacturing. And then they started in the 1990s sort of getting rid of their internal sales forces. And most recently, it's not that they don't do as much, but they don't do anywhere near as much research as they used to do, and they farm a lot of that out. So many of these big companies are, in essence, these sort of marketing machines. And, will they be a partner for us? Absolutely. In terms of, getting stuff out and awareness and sort of the big picture, story that it has to be told around it. But definitely, they want to change. It's been a long time in the making. You cannot just, when you go to sort of the FDA website of sort of the new drugs that were released that year, and you realize that only 8% of them are novel, which means the rest of 92% of everything else is just a me too of something, or has nothing unique in terms of sort of patient benefit, other than it's just copying an existing sort of class of drug. You realize that we have a lot of work to do. And so, yes, we're going to hurt some. We're going to put some lines completely out of business, but you're going to create a lot of new sort of forms and structure in the industry that didn't exist before. And a lot of this, I think, we're beginning to see some of it. And when I say the existing form, I mean the future is not going to be about little white pills in bottles that you get from the pharmacy. Drugs and these different types of interventions that are going to accomplish things like limb regeneration or complex brain regeneration or tumor reversion are going to look different. They're going to be a lot more complex. And so, yes, there will be, in my opinion, maybe even two industries that form, sort of the traditional sort of treatment-centric one, and other side of that will be this curative forms of intervention. And yeah, there are other things. I mean, obviously, we're focused on, as an example, kidney regeneration, which is, $60 billion market when you take into account just sort of kidney transplant and dialysis that occur every year. So, in the ideal scenario for something like that, yes, not only are we going to kill off the need for the transplant rejection drugs, but hopefully we'll kill off the need for the dialysis market, which is $30 billion market a year, but hey, if we can keep your kidneys functioning and regenerate them as they're deteriorating, you don't need dialysis. You won't need a transplant. So hopefully we'll see a point in the near future, immediate near future, but future where organ transplantation is not really a thing. Needless to say, this will be transformational.
That's what I'm saying. I mean, it seems that, I hope, that they – I mean, there's a lot of resources, behind those companies, that they will recognize, the benefits of that curative approach, rather than just a symptomatic kind of, kind of a business, kind of keeping it in the business. So, okay, well, that was my question, because I know like I read in the introduction, you had that pharma background, and and sometimes it just makes me wonder, if business sometimes takes precedence over the fact of curing, the fact that if we can cure something, that then that kind of negates a whole lot of business for some folks. But if they're a part of the process for the cure, then it seems to me that there's, a good business model there as well.
Yeah, I mean, I think they, this is a sort of a side note, I think they, unfortunately, I think Big Pharma backed themselves into a corner in the last couple decades just because they got so damn large. And when you have these companies that sort of have pared back now and are these huge marketing entities with $60, $70, $80 billion a year in revenue, and they're promising Wall Street and their investors a certain amount of growth, it's not going to come from the old school stuff anymore. It just can't. There's no way you can come up with, hey, $2 billion a year cholesterol-lowering drugs. They've been through that window already. Got to be something else. So, yeah, I think they've done it to themselves.
Yeah, great. So part of the work that you do there at BioQuark deals with biologics. So, also kind of the biologic regulatory state. So can you talk a little bit about what biologics are?
Absolutely. So a biologic is a very simple term for any drug that is produced in a living system and is a protein or carbohydrate in its basic formula. So no synthetic chemical is a biologic. Those would be traditional chemical drugs. A biologic would be something like a vaccine. A biologic would be something like a human growth hormone, an insulin. Anything that is produced in the living cell system and is of a protein or carbohydrate structure. And that's basically it. Other sort of newer types of biologics, or the things that are placed in the biologic class, include cell therapies, and maybe some of the gene therapies that are coming down. But anything basically that is either living or is related and produced in a living system, as opposed to just something that was whipped up and synthesized in a chemistry lab somewhere that has never been naturally seen before.
Okay. So with the company focusing on novel biologics. Let me put it this way. There's when I read that there was different types of biologics, and let's see, there was regenerative biology, evolutionary genomics, biocybernetics. Mm-hmm. Those were like a few different elements. So can you talk a little bit about those elements and maybe what kind of, how would you combine? What are some of the an example of a combination, you know, of those elements that would create something unique and novel?
Absolutely. So yeah, so we focus on these three areas of science that have been around for several decades now and are integrating them. So number one, you mentioned regenerative biology, which is basically the study of both human and non-human regenerative systems. So, you know, we mentioned a little of this early on, of the five types of regeneration that exist in nature. You and I and everyone listening have three of them. So we have physiological regeneration in parts of our bodies like blood and our skin, which naturally will turn over and rapidly dividing cells. We have wound healing, where we like to put down scar tissue. And we also have in our liver, humans possess a hypertrophic response, where basically if, you know, we have some type of acute damage through our liver, the liver will grow in size. It won't grow in the proper structure, but it will try to take on some of the missing parts. That's it. There are two other forms of regeneration in nature, known as epimorphosis and morpholaxis, which is what you see in the non-human kingdom. So the ability to regrow a limb, more complex, you see worms that whose heads can be chopped off only to regrow a new head and a new body. These are clearly highly advanced forms of regeneration that are more science fiction in nature, but from an epimorphic perspective, the limbs, spinal cord, this is what we're focusing on. So we're very interested in studying regenerative biology and its history and how the salamander and the newt and the zebrafish can lose that brain segment, lose that part of the heart, lose their eyeball, and regrow it perfectly in form and function time and time again throughout their life. Secondarily, we focus on, as you mentioned, evolutionary genomics. What's that about? Basically, everything that kills us or is responsible for our degeneration and suffering as humans had some benefit in the past to some other species. So while high blood sugar levels are horrible for us, and we see them in diabetes and other endocrine dysfunction, many animals need this, especially the fast-running ones that have to get away from prey and have to run really fast, like cheetahs and gazelles and that. Inflammation is another example. Horrible for us in terms of autoimmune disease and osteoarthritis and things of this nature. But in many organisms, inflammation is the only form of infectious disease defense they have. So here are some examples. We need to understand these differences because, you know, at the end of the day, we're humans and we have a human genome, but one only needs to look at the tails and the gills and the webbed hands and feet that we have when we're inside our mothers to realize that there are many layers of our genome from the evolutionary past. It's very important for us to understand this, not just for our research, but to live properly. There's a reason we shouldn't have high blood sugar levels. There's a reason we shouldn't have a lot of inflammation and so forth. And lastly, we integrate sort of the science of cybernetics into what we do, which is basically the study of complex systems. And this really goes back to what we're talking about, symptoms versus cure. And there's a general sort of learning in the world of cybernetics that says, you know what, if you have a really complex system, whatever that system may be, a computer, your brain, or what have you, you cannot control that system for intervention. You need more complex interventions to control the system. And that is why simple pills, simple things that affect symptoms, not going to deal with the big pictures of health and disease. So what are we doing? We are integrating learnings from these three areas to create what we call combinatorial biologics, drugs, biologic drugs that do more than one thing. We see some of this already, and we've seen some of this in the areas of cancer combination therapies and HIV cocktails in recent decades, but we want to go further with it. Because when you deal with something like regenerating the limb, that's not going to be a little white pill in a bottle. We need to understand how to reprogram the cells so they go back to an active state of growing. We need to figure out how to get rid of the dead scar tissue. We need to basically integrate the signals to say, you know, in this place goes an arm and not an eyeball. So there's a lot happening, and we are very focused on how we can create biologics at the end of the day that can do many things simultaneously. And that is sort of the underlying message behind what a combinatorial biologic is and our focus in development.
Wow. Yeah. Okay. There's so much to digest there. It's just fascinating. We're about halfway through the show, Ira. I want to take a quick break, and I do want to invite listeners. If you'd like to call in, listeners, you can call in at 619-789-4359. And for those listening live in the chat room, if you have any questions, feel free to type them in. And then when we come back, Ira, on your website, you have quite a bit about BQA, which is a biologic from BioQuark. So I'd like to talk a little bit about that. I mean, that seems to be
Absolutely. You're
doing some great stuff with that. Okay, so everyone stay tuned. We'll be right back after this brief break.
Hello, this is Robert Sharp. I want to thank you for joining us and hope you are enjoying today's show. Just a reminder that we have a wealth of information and resources available on our website, www.biteradio.me. There is a calendar of upcoming shows, along with an archive link that will give you access to more than 1,200 shows we have had over the past 7 years. Also on the site are links to the products and services we provide, books, greeting cards, photography, and a wellness store. Our show is available as a free podcast on iTunes, and you can subscribe for free at the iTunes Store, or even quicker, there is a link on our website homepage. We are also on many social media platforms, Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn, etc., and we also have buttons to those platforms on the top of our homepage. Our website, www.biteradio.me, has much for you to explore and enjoy. I also very much appreciate you supporting our guests, and especially today's guest. And now, back to the show.
Okay, everyone, thank you for staying with us. Again, today my very special guest is Ira Pastor. He is the CEO of BioQuark, Inc. Again, you can find out more about the company, their work. They've got a great page with all kinds of articles for you to read on their website, which is www.bioquark.com. And that's BioQuark.com. And again, I do have a direct link to the website in the show page description. Okay, so with that, we're back, Ira.
Wonderful. Thanks for having me.
Great. Okay, so what about BQA? That sounds like quite an interesting biologic that you developed there.
Absolutely. And this is the sort of the lead candidate in our portfolio right now, and we sort of describe it as a first-generation combinatorial biologic. But basically, we got to thinking, and this is and we're the first to say that a lot of this work, once again, goes back to the historic literature in terms of what has been done in the past in regards to, let's say, turning back time and starting the development and the regeneration process over. In humans, there is only one point in time, one brief period of time, where the things we've talked about happen. So in essence, complex regeneration, disease reversion, age reversal. It is in the brief period of time when the new egg becomes fertilized to form an embryo. It is this point in time where the egg, and all ladies that are listening, you're responsible for this. Men have a very small role in it. But
okay.
It is this point in time where the new embryo has to undertake a variety of tasks. It is where cellular age is reset. It is where any damage in DNA is eliminated, so both genetic and it is where the organelles, all those little components of cells, are reset and rejuvenated. And it's where a lot of inflammation and oxidation and other infectious damage need to be kept at bay to keep the embryo safe. The only place that this happens is in the egg following fertilization. It is the reason that all of us come out of our mother's wombs, aged zero, with out the traditional diseases of older age. Babies are not born with Alzheimer's disease. And we have, you know, a head, two arms, two legs, and so forth. We got to thinking, okay, how can we capture this potential? Because it is this sort of reprogramming, this ability to turn back time, not just to turn back time, but to sort of pull the rubber band back, start over, and then push forward into appropriate development paths. That limb, that heart segment, that part of the brain. And so we focus on taking a form of research that's been going on about 50 years now, which focuses on ooroplasm, so the biochemical components within eggs, and isolating them in a form of a biologic. Now, we can't use human eggs for this. And why is that? The reason being is that human females do not make a lot of them in a lifetime. And if you do want to purchase them, I think the going rate is about $10,000 per egg. However, there are many species out there that produce millions of eggs. And what was found out, and this goes back to the 1940s, is there's some species that produce eggs that are extremely similar to human eggs, namely certain species of frogs. And while it is not very well known, there are certain species of frogs that have been utilized for decades now in the pharmaceutical industry and the research community to study these very dynamics of resetting time and turning back the damage and forms of deterioration that occur in the dynamic of creating a new life. And so what we have done, we have taken that research and we've moved it one step further, basically looking at all the proteins and the peptides and the microRNAs that are responsible for these dynamics and isolating them from, purifying them and creating BQA, which is the first one coming to our biologic. It is, you know, people say, well, what can you compare this with? And it's actually not as rare as one might think. I mean, the most, one of the most valuable xenobiologic substances on the market today is Botox. And it is another example of a sort of a non-human biologic that generates billions of dollars a year and is used for other purposes, of course. But this is a sort of a similar proxy to what we're doing. It's basically harnessing what nature has produced and taking it and molding it into a usable form in terms of a biologic drug for different purposes in terms of regeneration, damage reversal, and ultimately the diseases of aging. That is what BQA is about, and
yeah,
there are others that are going to be following.
Yeah. So now that you've kind of got this synthesized or kind of you have this biologic, What areas have you been testing it? You know, its usage. I mean, how do you determine? You know, I mean, there's so many areas that could benefit from such a treatment, how do you identify where to start and how to, you know, where to begin?
Yeah, I mean, we at this point, we transition sort of to pharmaceutical preclinical research 101. So, obviously, yes, you mentioned we are involved in repair and regeneration dynamics, and that basically, if you put aside infectious diseases for a moment, it's everything. Obviously, we can't focus on everything. So we've been focusing our research internally on three major areas. Central nervous system. The central nervous system is clearly what most people will tell you is the major frontier that is not just sort of an unmet medical need in terms of how we remodel and regenerate in it, whether that's the spinal cord or the higher brain, but just because of the so-called tsunami of Alzheimer's that is predicted to come this way in the coming decades. So we realize that not just because there has not been sufficient research happening, but what's coming, we have to be active here. So we are very focused in models from rats to guinea pigs to rabbits and so forth in studying not just how GQA impacts regeneration in these damaged models, but also in the reparative events that come before the need for regeneration. So obviously in Alzheimer's, you have the destruction of the neurons. We need to regenerate and replace. But at the same point, there are upstream events that cause those infections. So we need to focus on both sides of this in our research. So this has been very active for us, looking at not just the lesion models in Alzheimer's, but also in the more severe traumatic brain injury models, where you have an acute impact as opposed to the long-term deterioration and neurodegeneration in something like Alzheimer's or Parkinson's. So that's the first area. Secondly, cancer. There are, needless to say, we've spoken a bit about this. The oncology space, unfortunately, has, since the war on cancer has been going on, been extensively focused on the kill event, and whether that is old school kill events, chemotherapy and radiation, or even sort of the newer stuff with regard to smart drugs and immunotherapy, at the end of the day, it's all about a kill response. But the problem has been, and it still is, no matter what class of drug you're looking at, once again, the species that are most resilient, the ones that are most resistant to cancer, are not the ones that kill. They're the ones that change and turn cancer into normal tissue. And so we are very active in melanoma and breast cancer models, in glioma models, in studying the dynamics of how we take that tumor, whether it's in the brain, whether it's in the breast, and revert it into normal tissue where it is today. So this is a very active part of our program as well. And lastly, we are focused, we are not an anti-aging company per se, we cannot ignore the fact that everything, whether we're talking about degeneration or damage, when we talk about, once again, upstream and the things that are going on, everything is connected to the biology of aging. And so we really need to understand not just the disease, sort of pathology that comes before the symptoms, but before the pathology comes a sort of amorphous cloud of aging dynamics and gerontological dynamics. So we are also doing, we have organisms here in the lab that we've been dosing for years and studying sort of the dynamics of what happens if, you're constantly sort of regenerating throughout a lifetime. So these are all very important areas for us as a program. Now, obviously, we would like to be doing more. But there's only so you can't spread yourself so thin. I mean, no company in the world does that. So we really have to be, once again, we have to look at the areas of unmet medical need, and we have to translate them backwards to sort of what the most efficient things are to study in the lab today. And that's, in essence, where we are with our internal program.
Yeah. Okay. Well, those three areas, the central nervous system, cancer, and the anti-aging. I mean, you cover a whole world of issues, you know, with those, and you know, I can see why those would be a focus. I went to your articles on your website. There was one that was from, I believe it was U.S. News, that talked about synthetic biology, you know, the topic of synthetic biology. And so this is kind of what we're talking about with the biologic. Is that basically synonymous with synthetic biology, or is there a different meaning for that?
Synthetic biology is a very broad term. It definitely if you look at the sort of the use of living systems or biologic systems to create new things that are beneficial for human health, yes, we fall into that category, and I sort of, during the interview, was making that point. In a synthetic biology scheme, yes, but we're not that sexy and exciting, because then at the other end of the spectrum are, you know, the Craig Venters of the world that, you know, they want to create new life forms and new DNA strands that have never been seen anywhere, and they want to fax, you know, DNA to a DNA synthesizing machine on Mars and create new Martian life. All of this stuff is technically synthetic biology in one form or another, but we're a little more down to earth, and we're focused here on the short-term needs of, as opposed to creating new stuff that has never been seen in the last 4 billion years. Or going to Mars with new speed.
Right.
But that's not
happening. It's interesting because, I mean, obviously your approach is just very practical, and it's, you know, and it's based on, you know, the need, you know, the medical need, where some of the current treatments or processes don't adequately address, you know, the medical issues. So, I mean, obviously, you know, that's, that's real appropriate, but I just found it, you know, fascinating when I was reading that, you know, and you know, talking about the different DNA, and then one area of, you know, something potentially digesting plastic, and I kind of laughed at that, because, I mean, that would be, even though it's science fiction now, I mean, you know, science fiction of the 50s is now reality today, so, I mean, it's, you know, one of those things, and I have some, you know, very activist friends who are, you know, trying to bring attention to the, you know, the crisis of plastics in our oceans and that kind of thing, and in our foods. And when I read that, I thought, well, you know, that would be one way to, you know, kind of address that issue. But I mean, it's kind of like the Wild Wild West, you know, when it comes to biology.
You know, that whole area, and I have two perspectives on it. I think, yes, I think obviously from a high level, yeah, I mean, that would be awesome, you know, if we could do those things. At the same point, I think, you know, there are organisms on this planet that already do that, that digest plastic. There are those that, you know, create electricity. There are even organisms that love to swim around in nuclear reactors and digest that stuff. And so it's one of those things, like, do we really need to create entirely new organisms for that? Or do we need to go back to nature and more appropriately sort of... Yeah, I guess one of the issues I would have is if you create this thing out of the blue that does those things, you know, what else is it going to do? I guess that's my... I rather sort of stick with what evolution and nature have created and sort of build off that as opposed to creating something entirely from scratch. But,
yeah.
You know, whatever. That's just my
opinion. Well, you know, that's, I mean, you know, and you're right. You know, I mean, there, you know, kind of if we look at what we have and, you know, ways of utilizing that to help solve, you know, not only the medical issues, but some of, you know, some really social and you know, environmental kinds of issues that mm-hmm. we have too. So, yeah. Now, and also one of the, in that, I believe in that same article, it talked a little bit about diabetes. Now, I understand that, you know, they're probably, you know, some time away from, you know, maybe a biologic helping with diabetes, but where would your work fit in with that particular disease or disorder?
Well, there, you know, well, there's really three things. Now you have three types of diabetes, right? You have type 1, which is based on the destruction of the pancreas via, you know, autoimmune dynamics mm-hmm. from a very young age. You have type 2, which is a more systemic disease involving the muscles and the liver and other sort of insulin sensitivity, where the insulin that you create no longer works as well in those particular organs. And then you have this, sort of this type 3 diabetes that has evolved, which is one of the underpinnings behind Alzheimer's, many people believe now. And then, you know, we've been focusing so much on the sort of the amyloid and the plaque formation, but we haven't realized as much as we should have that there's other problems beneath that. Where do we fit in? We fit in all across the board, and it's something. And you know, I didn't mention this because it's earlier stage for us, but this is something that we have also started looking at in our own experiments. Because there is not just regenerative need in terms of the type 1 situation, but the gene expression changes that occur in type 2, which, you know, recent data showing, you know, obviously type 2 is a major lifestyle issue, and yes, you can exercise and lose weight and have appropriate diet and bring a lot of it under control, but you still have gene expression changes that may not go away. So while you may lose weight and look a lot healthier and so forth, you still have to deal with the fact that, hey, you know, you walked around and smoked and you drank 5 Cokes a day and ate cheesesteaks, whatever. It had a lasting impact even when you changed your lifestyle. So we're going to fit into all of it. We do not have a program and long-term strategy yet, but we definitely fit into those two areas and with our central nervous system work, potentially type 3, because the connection to Alzheimer's is, in our opinion, not just important, it's extremely important. We're learning more and more about this each day and how much of a metabolic disease Alzheimer's may be versus just a random accident of time.
Yeah.
So, interested in all of them and working as hard as we can.
Yeah. So now, how long has BioQuark been at this, and where do you see, you know, the future? I mean, in both in direction and in time.
Sure. So, you know, we are. We were founded back in 2008. We were fairly virtual until 2012. We have a short, medium, and long-term plan. I mean, at our long-term core, we are a drug/biologics development company. We have a 3-year plan in the United States to be in the clinic for the kidney regeneration program that we are focused on. And we know that from a drug development perspective, we're moving forward on that. Simultaneously, we are also developing an active consumer product business for the the skin and the dermatological interest that we find out there, just because the skin is the largest organ in the body. It deteriorates first. It's the main thing exposed to the environment and the microbiome and so forth. So we are, we've got a lot of interest from partners and other firms to create non-prescription dermatological products that will be coming to market sooner than our drug opportunities. But there's very important connections there between skin and skin health and sort of the biomechanics of this membrane that cover us and downstream disease. And lastly, in the middle, although we are a U.S.-based company, based in the U.S., and very focused on the U.S., we cannot ignore, nor do the smart people tell you that you should ignore anymore, the so-called rest of the world. Because while pharmaceutical companies didn't care too much 20 years ago about everything else and only focused on the U.S., nowadays it's predicted that's where the main growth is going to be occurring in the next 10 to 20 years. So, you can be a U.S. company, but if you ignore Thailand or ignore Turkey or ignore Panama, and you can get your drug to market 2 years faster, you're doing yourself a disservice. So, we're not an international company in all these countries, but we are definitely out there traveling and learning from healthcare institutes and other potential partners what the possibilities are in these countries and how we can move the clinical program forward faster and use some of those learnings for the U.S. program.
Yeah. Well, I noticed your team seemed to have quite an international, at least in their name, quite an international presence. I was wondering, because the U.S. sometimes can be overly restrictive, when it comes to, testing and getting to market. I'm sure, you follow strict protocols wherever you are, but it would be a big disservice not to be able to get some of these things tested that's where the advances are going to be made.
Yeah, you only have to, while it might have seemed sort of as a niche in the past, one only needs to look at a couple months ago at what Merck, which is the fifth largest drug company in the world, $70 billion in sales and so forth, recently did with the Chinese government, where they basically set up a relationship on an island next to China, right off the coast of China, to allow anyone to access their cancer drugs for unapproved uses. So, there is this huge area of sort of medical tourism and medical travel that, while it once was reserved for cheap dental work or breast implants or what have you, now you're seeing a real move internationally. And, when you take into account sort of the globalization of medical training and research now, and you see things like, Harvard Medical School setting up in Dubai, or while Cornell Medical in Qatar, or Newcastle University in the UK in Malaysia, you have a lot of really good first world, sort of educated folks now. They're operating clinical research all over the place. You have to take, there's a big set of opportunities there, and you have to look international and all possibilities.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, Ira, this has really been a fascinating conversation. I knew it was going to be, and I really wanted to thank you for your time. I just feel like there's just a whole new world opening up that, so many people don't even realize it.
Yeah, it's, I like to say it is a very promising future. I know a lot of people think about pharmaceuticals and biotech, and they either think that it's boring, or it's like an evil industry, or it's something that's always promising things 50 years down the road. But, we, in my opinion, are, whether we're talking about the 100,000 people that die every day of aging or the 50,000 that die every day of acute trauma, we are on the precipice of some really important work. And I think the future is very promising in terms of human health, wellness, and sort of answering a lot of these problems that have plagued us for literally thousands of years.
I agree. And, you know, I mean, just getting just the understanding of the systems. And like you said, going back to nature, I mean, there is so much that nature can show us if we just take the time to look.
Exactly. Yep.
Well, thank you again for your time. I've thoroughly enjoyed our conversation, and I just look forward to following your work.
I appreciate you having me here, Art.
It's my pleasure. Again, everyone, today my very special guest has been Ira Pastor. He is the CEO of BioQuark, Inc. Again, you can find out more about the work that they're doing by visiting their website, which is www.bioquark.com, BioQuark.com. And again, I do have a direct link to their website in the show page description. So everyone, I want to thank you for joining us for this edition of the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show. And until we meet again.
Thank you for tuning in. You've been listening to the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show. Be sure to visit our website at www.biteradio.me. That's BiteRadio.me. You can also find us on Facebook and Twitter at Byte Radio Me, and our shows are also available as a free podcast from iTunes. And until we meet again, remember to be a bright light by bringing inspiration to your world and to the lives of those you touch.